Dean's great. I mean, Dean will look like he's 29, I think, for another 20 years. And honestly, I've seen him. I've sat at him at dinners, and he eats so clean. He doesn't even order soda. I mean, it's tremendous.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Rhinoplasty Podcast with me, Dr. Cameron McIntosh. We are in season three, coming to you live with face-to-face interviews. And the beautiful thing about this is I've managed to actually track down some of these guys who are almost impossible to get hold of to interview. And we are coming from Berlin today. We're at the International Meeting of Rhinoplasty Societies. And I've got somebody who I've had my eye on wanting to get on the podcast for a while, finally, right here in the studio with me. Ash Gavami, welcome to the episode.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. This is going to be fun.
So, when I was asking you how's the best way to pronounce your surname, you said it should be like salami, eh?
Yeah. Well, because people say Gavani, so it's Gavami, and it sounds like salami as far as the syllables. So
Yeah.
Ash Gavami. Ash Khan is my first name, but
Yeah.
everyone calls me Ash, all my friends.
Yeah. Awesome. So, the podcast listen all around the world.
Oh, okay.
Tell the listeners a little bit about who you are and where do you come from? What do you spend
Sure.
most of your time doing?
Yeah, so I grew up in Los Angeles, California, in the United States, and I did all my training actually outside of California. I did university in Newport Beach area, which is like about an hour and a half south.
Okay.
And then after that, I went ahead to med school in Ohio. I'm sorry, to Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin, and then which was a great freezing place, but a major college town, so very fun. Did my medical school there, did extra time in anatomy, studying anatomy there, wrote some papers. And then I went and matched into plastic surgery at Case Western in Cleveland, and then finished off at UT Southwestern with Rod Rorick, Jack Gunter, John Tebbutt, Siam Hamra, all the big greats, Fritz Barton. So I was at UT Southwestern in Dallas during what's considered like one of the golden eras of Dallas. And at the time, I really do feel like it was probably the best training program in the world. And it was heavily focused on rhinoplasty, as you know, with Jack Gunter and Rod Rorick running the Dallas Rhinoplasty meeting. Now, I think it's approaching 50 years. I mean, it's been around for a long time. So I did a lot of rhinoplasty research there. I wrote the first ever Middle Eastern rhinoplasty chapter in the famous Dallas Rhinoplasty textbook. And, I would spend my weekends at Starbucks writing chapters, articles, delving into rhinoplasty, spending time in the cadaver lab before and after the meeting because there's a big cadaver portion. So we had access to all these cadavers. We could do all these studies. I did studies on, the fat compartments, ligaments of the face and nose and the nose. And it was amazing, tremendous training. So when I got out, I went back to Los Angeles to Beverly Hills, opened up a private practice, and then I soon got affiliated with UCLA as an assistant professor. And then right away, I was invited back to Dallas. I think now in the 16th year in a row, consecutive, I've been faculty in Dallas. And of course, throughout the years, I've helped with the Aesthetic Society. And so I've been very academically involved. And as you know now, I was privileged to be voted in as the president of the Rhinoplasty Society. So this meeting is, as people listening might know, Rhinoplasty Society of America with the Rhinoplasty Society of Europe combined meeting. So representing it as president here. And it's rhinoplasty has always been very multicultural by definition. You're from South Africa. I spoke to people from Nigeria, from Asia, from all the continents because noses are by definition very cultural. When you do a rhinoplasty, you don't want to change anyone's ethnicity, make them look awkward or weird. So I spend a lot of time focusing on this aspect of rhinoplasty. And when I grow up, I'm Persian, so I saw my mom, my aunts, my mom's friends, sometimes two, three in a row with casts on when I was 8 years old, recovering in our house. So for us, it's very normal, and it's the number one operation in Iran. So rhinoplasty, for me to do it, it's about 60% of my practice. I still love body surgery, but 60% is rhinoplasty. And For me, it was such a good focus and so important to mix it with ethnic and cultural backgrounds and ancestry, and it's fascinated me. I always ask my patients if they know their DNA and where they're from, and I like to know that, and I document it. I'm doing a long-term study on it. And
Fantastic.
recently, me and Sam Most and Nazim Cherkis came out with a textbook called Global Rhinoplasty, which incorporates all of these materials. So it's a passion of mine. It's a passion of mine to do rhinoplasty. And despite the challenges, especially today, I feel like with social media, which I'm considered to be a big part of, was involved with social media and Instagram a lot longer than longer ago than most people, since 2012. So I've been fortunate to have a very high organic following, work with celebrities, but the most difficult, challenging thing now with social media, I think, is that people come in with unrealistic expectations. They use filters on their face. They look at results from the operating room from other people, and they think that can be achieved. As we all know, the nose changes every 6 months, year, 2 years, 3 years, constantly evolves. So I'm constantly having to almost lecture my patients, and I spend almost sometimes 15, 20 minutes talking to these teenagers and these 20-year-olds and 25-year-olds, even some of the 45, 50-year-old mothers and moms of 10, they come in, they still have unrealistic expectations. So it's rhinoplasty is just always evolving. And now with preservation techniques and everything, it's just really important to master not only the techniques, but how to talk to your patients and how to avoid AI taking over and unrealistic expectations taking over. And as us being here in Berlin, I was just in Clínica Planas in Barcelona, lecturing there. And I have multiple places I'm going to be going next year. We're going to go to Dubai for ASAPS. We have a meeting. It's very global. It's very international. It's very multi-ethnic. So it's great that you're from South Africa and you're doing a podcast with me, Amiran, but in California, now in Berlin, talking about global
No, it's
rhinoplasty.
amazing. So,
Sorry, that was a long-winded answer,
no, it's
but
fantastic. That's
yeah,
what the podcast is about.
it put it all
The
in a
less
box.
I speak, the better. What has it been like for you in the competitiveness of Beverly Hills?
Well, I'll be very honest, and I'm always a straight shooter. Those that know me very well, and even when I gave my inauguration speech for accepting the presidency of Rhinoplasty, I was very straightforward. I'm just one of those that's straight. As we say in America, we shoot from the hip. We don't mess around. So very honestly, it's been a big challenge because I'm passionate about this. I love what I do. But from day one, my competitors that are my age or a little older, and then the senior guys in town, when I came into town, obviously they're not too happy about it. You know, it's very ultra competitive. So of course you get a lot of, you know, we all experience a little bit of professional jealousy. We're all, you know, ambitious,
That's right.
overachieving type personalities. If you're gonna not be that, you can't really become a surgeon. Especially not something like a rhinoplasty surgeon, because that's ultra competitive, ultra challenging, technically very demanding and difficult. It's almost as if you're doing just abstract painting versus trying to do a Rembrandt very accurately, right? It's a
Absolutely.
very big difference. So it's more like a Rembrandt. And I would say, you know, the talking and the submersive body language and eye contact and the way unsaid and spoken words and consults by competitors said about patients that go to you and the guy down the street, it can be a little bit difficult to deal with. And I've just what I do is I don't even ask if I'm doing a revision, I don't ask who the previous surgeon was. I a
Absolutely.
lot of times don't even ask for the operative record because it doesn't help me too much. But a lot of people don't do that. They go, oh, you went to Gavami. Yeah, you're not the only one. You know, like things like that. I think is very common in places like Los Angeles and Beverly Hills because it's so competitive. And I have developed, whether I've liked it or not, it's just happened this way, and I'm very fortunate and it's challenging in its own way or not, but I do have a big celebrity clientele and patient base. And so in their circles, the word gets out. I don't need to market or advertise, you know. But you know, when people in town know that and they see me posting with a celebrity, it makes them to become even more aggressive with the lingo, like, oh, Gavami, you know. So honestly, it's very ultra competitive, but I have thick skin. I trained in Dallas with Rod and Jack Gunter and the big giants, so I have like an armor over me, where, you know, I'm not permeable and I'm not going to be affected by that. And that's why I've succeeded, because I just look straight. and I do my thing.
Yeah.
And now I'm a part of a fellowship. I just hired an associate, so he's finally going to be helping me because I have such little time to finally. I mean, I have a textbook out and all that, but I really want to get a lot of my ideas down in scientific articles
Yeah.
because throughout the years, some of the things I've talked about have been copied by people and switched around, and it doesn't bother me too much, but it's honestly my fault for not going through and publishing it right away when I go speak about it. So in many ways, our field is just so competitive. It's competitive among all our peers here. We're at the meeting. It's competitive in your town. But if you can't have the thick skin and you're not, ambitious, successful type in anything, whether it's a Formula One race car driver, a professional football player, none of these people got to where they were because they were worried about competition.
That's it. I love it. One of I always love some of the different quotes that Rod throws out in theatre in the OR. Says Cameron, everyone's world famous on their own website. Like, it's funny, eh?
No, we don't ask for things like that, but when it happens, it's nice, and it happens over time. I didn't pay for it, buy it. I've been around for a while. It's been about 16, 17 years I've been in practice, and from day one, I was right in the same building in Beverly Hills, didn't move. So I eventually, it's like a tree. Eventually that tree grows and the roots go deep.
100%. And the more wind, the stronger the root system has to be.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. You're right. You're right.
And so your practice for the listeners, how much of that's rhinoplasty? How much of it is other cosmetic surgery, etc.?
I mean, it varies month to month, honestly. Rhinoplasty for me has always been the top, and it's about 60% on average. Some months it'll be 40 or 50, some months it'll be 80. The rest of it, I developed a reputation, and I also lecture for the Aesthetic Society around the world on safety and fat transfer of the buttocks. So I do a lot of 360 high definition body contouring. So usually when I get invited to lecture, it's rhinoplasty and buttock and body contouring. But I also do a fair amount of facelifts and eyelid work and things that I don't always lecture about. And I do fat transfers all over the face. So that makes up the other 40%. But 60% is almost consistently rhinoplasty.
Okay, and then two other things like family life.
I mean,
Where
it's
did
a
that fit in?
challenge. It's a challenge. I have kids, I have a family, and I have a wife, and it's a challenge. They're all here with me now.
Oh, beautiful.
So we did a whole tour of Europe. We started out in Barcelona, where I lectured for Planas. I'm sure you know Clinica Planas, world famous, beautiful facility there, huge, almost like a hospital. And then from that, we did Amsterdam, Brussels. Now we're here, and after here, we're going to go to Paris. So I try to turn my work trips into
Correct,
vacations,
eh?
but sometimes I travel solo also, and so. On those trips, I cut them a little shorter, but I always try to carve out a little bit of time. In fact, little known secret, I will accept some invitations places where I haven't been, where I want to make it a vacation. So I do decline certain places I've been a lot, or like they're like somewhere in the US. But international is hard. It's hard to travel international. It takes a lot of time away from your family and your practice. But we need it. We need to get away from our practice sometimes. It's good for mental health.
Absolutely, because
Physician well-being is one of my agendas in my one-year presidency for Rhinoplast Society.
but this is such a hot topic at the moment, and something I want to unpack a bit more is this physician wellness, mental, not just mental wellness, but physical wellness as well. Like, look after your physical body. And I think if there's one person in the world of rhinoplasty who's done incredibly well with that, it's Dean. I mean, that
Oh,
guy
he's
really
very
nailed it.
clean. Dean's great. I mean, Dean will look like he's 29, I think, for another 20 years. And honestly, I've seen him. I've sat at him at dinners, and he eats so clean. He doesn't even order soda. I mean, it's tremendous. I'm getting better at that. I limited, things that I think about my gut health, my mental health. I weight train, I work out. I'm better some weeks than others. We're all, have rough weeks where we just can't even make it to the gym. We can't do one jog. But I try to at least do some form of meditation here and there, take time, go for a walk, get out in nature. I mean, that's what makes us human. You can really get lost, especially in Beverly Hills. I've seen it happen in competitive markets.
Brilliant.
People get lost into their business. And what ends up happening, you end up becoming almost a slave to your own business. So you end up becoming the business runs you instead of you running the business, your staff, your business. And then you're just basically just running around being a part of that machine, whereas you should be the one sitting back operating that machine. So that's one of the biggest challenges, honestly. And it's a catch 22 because we all strive when we're younger to be, famous and famous enough to get a lot of patients and within the town have a good reputation, get very busy. And when you do get that busy, the focus on your own wellness
100%.
can easily just drop down in priority. And that's not good because we've all seen our mentors and older surgeons walking around hunched over, artificial hip, their neck doesn't move because they didn't take care of themselves.
100%. Wow.
Do you surf? I feel like South Africa, it's all about water
That is
and surfing, swimming, dodging sharks.
I think we've got to get you to South Africa.
Okay.
Bring the family for
Okay.
safari. So
Okay.
no, my background is actually I only like a bit late in my life ended up completing my medical studies and going to specialize because I was a professional Olympic canoeist. So
Oh,
I did
there you
whitewater
go.
kayaking.
Oh, wow. There
And
you go. Okay.
so I still I get onto the ocean and I
Yes.
run trail running and I'm with the kids, we mountain biking. I'm very busy and sporty. Surfing's, I've tried it a few times and it's
It's
never
challenging.
actually, I mean, our house is 100 yards from the
Yeah.
beach. So well, I'm on the beach every day with the
Yes, yeah.
dogs or paddling, but
But surfing's a
surfing
whole
hasn't
nother thing. Yeah.
quite
I just
gotten.
assumed, but see, I was not far off. You liked water. Yeah.
I know Aaron wants to come and surf in South Africa
Yeah.
one day,
Yeah.
but I'll pull him out in the boat and watch him do it.
Nice.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, Ash, man, it's so interesting listening to how well you've done. And just like what stands out for me is there's this achievement, but there's also like a real deep humility and understanding like a piece about who you are and what you're doing,
Thank you.
family man. And it's great. And I
Thank
think
you.
it's good for the listeners to be exposed to that
Yeah, thank you.
because I think there's sometimes this false conception of this, like this surgeon who's working on these celebrities. We all the same.
Yeah.
Like you do a rhinoploplasty on a celebrity, you do a rhinoploplasty on a non-celebrity, it's still the same rhinoploplasty,
Yes, of course. Yeah, I don't spend more time or give more attention or anything now. They demand more of our attention, celebrities, or not even celebrities, like even just high achieving CEOs of companies, people that don't have a lot of time, they like want this, that, they have assistants. Everyone's more demanding. Some patients are just really easy. And I've had some celebrities, honestly, that are easier than some of the moms of three that are housewives. So it's more personality, But yes, I have staff that I delegate to that, the celebrities and patients that demand more of our time and write 30 emails. Luckily, I have staff that handles most of that. But you do have to hold people in check. And one of the things I always tell everybody, especially those that are celebrity or very wealthy or something, I tell them, look, your body does not know who you are. Your body doesn't know that you're a billionaire. Your body doesn't know that you're this famous celebrity. Your body's going to heal how it wants based on your genetics and your anatomy and the best I can do for you. And we're human. Things can go the wrong directions. Your body's not going to say, oh, this, I belong to this person, so I better heal fast, different because she has red carpet coming up. So I always tell them, look, your body doesn't know who you are. I will do my best. You're going to heal how you heal, and I'm very realistic with them. But some people, especially in Beverly Hills, are not like that. They'll say whatever they need to say to get that celebrity in. And then I've seen a lot of people have problems, and celebrities have major problems, and they come to me for the revisions, especially really, really bad body work, like issues, or starting to look very artificial or fake. Or, the dermatologists just love pumping in all the fillers and making people look like pumpkins. And then they come to me to dissolve all of it, to replace it with fat, There's a, you got to be realistic and you got to be honest, you got to be humble, and you got to be number one. I think the best physicians and surgeons are human first, humanitarians first. And we always got to go back to the Hippocratic Oath, which is that we have to do no harm and we're there to heal. Even if we're doing something, quote unquote, superficial as cosmetic surgery. But I always say, and when I'm along among brain surgeons and heart surgeons, I always say, look, what I do is actually one of the most honest forms of medicine because I'm not trying to code something to get insurance money. I'm not trying to do extra work because I need to make more because I'm not being paid enough by insurance. I'm giving you the best I can. This is the price. It's a fee for service. I will deliver. So in some ways, our medicine and surgery we do is one of the most honest forms.
Yeah. And you can see it
Yeah, it's tangible.
straight away.
It's tangible and visible. I love it. Yeah.
Okay. Last question.
Yes.
Does Ash Gavami like salami?
I actually prefer martadella.
Okay.
Martadella is my weakness. I love it. In Iran, back in the day, my parents told me they used to get this one martadella bologna that was pistachios in it
Yeah.
that they would get from, I think most of it came from Armenia. A very famous
Amazing.
martadella called Mikelian is the
Yeah.
name of the company, and they still provide martadella to the US. So, martadella, a nice bottle of Coke, some nice pickles, that's my weakness. Salami itself, sometimes it's too hard. It's like an indurated revision rhinoplasty tissue. I like soft, soft pliable.
I've got to, when you come to South Africa, you've got to try my brother's stuff.
Okay.
He's his farmer Angus. He does incredible charcuterie food.
Oh, that's my
And
favorite.
they live in a wine farm, spare wine
That's
farm
the
in
best.
Cape Town. And
Yes. Charcuterie with the
yeah.
proper cheese and the good bread that's warm.
Oh,
And that's,
amazing.
yeah, I discovered that when I did IMCAS about 10 years ago in
Yeah.
France. And that was when I really truly had the best charcuterie. And from that point on, it's one of my pre-meal appetizers of choice.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much. On
Of
behalf
course,
of
it's
the
been a
listeners,
pleasure.
guys, thanks for tuning in to another program. And Ash, thanks. And
Of
good
course.
luck for
Thank
your
you.
next year as the president of the Rhinoplasty
Thank you.
Society.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.